Welcome to All Signs Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm WOSU reporter Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann Fisher today. Joining me are our regular co-hosts, WOSU restaurant reviewers, bloggers, and cooking teachers, Steve Stover. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Rich Terapak, Sr. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And today we're continuing our look at the international food scene in and around Columbus. This is, in fact, the third in a series of Chefs in the City shows featuring the chefs and restaurant owners who have expanded our horizons by sharing their own country's cuisine. In our February World Cuisine show, we learned that Columbus restaurants represent more than 48 different countries. Very impressive. And joining us for our first stop on the international tour today is Riziki Yusuf from Riziki Swahili Grill. Welcome, Riziki.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. Good morning, everyone.
Thanks for making the time for us. If you could start out just describing Swahili cuisine, what sets it apart?
Swahili cuisine, it's food from Tanzania. It's more like food, a little bit of influence from Indian cuisine, Persian, and from the Swahili coast of Zanzibar.
And give us a sense, if people don't know their African geography, what part of the continent are we talking about? And just the sort of the multi-country influences that inform the cuisine there.
East Africa. So it's in the eastern part of Africa. So I come from Zanzibar. So that's where the spices, Zanzibar is known for their spices, the Spice Island. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. So it's in the eastern part of Africa. It's a very small island in Tanzania.
What sets it apart from, say, other African cuisines?
For the most part, African cuisine, like let's say if you go to West Africa, their food is a lot similar, but East African food is completely different from the West African cuisine and the northern part of Africa.
And remind us where your restaurant is located. Give us your story a little bit. You've been in town for a few years now.
Oh, yes. I opened up Riziki Swahili Grill back in January of 2018, and we're located at 1872 Tamarack Circle South. That's in between 161 and Morse Road.
And it was successful right away, so you were able to get through the COVID.
Yes, it was an amazing journey, but of course, everything had its ups and downs. It was a little bit tough at the beginning, and then COVID hit, but right now it's doing really good.
That's great. Part of the success came from carryout, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because when I started, it's a small restaurant, so I can only sit up to 16 people at once. So when I started I established it as a carryout restaurant. So that's what really helped me during the COVID.
Sure. It's not a bad idea to start small.
Yes.
Real estate is expensive.
It is, very.
Give us a sense of some of your signature dishes there.
Well, the chapati. I love the chapati. Chapati is a flatbread, mostly eaten in the eastern part of Africa. And that is a to-go-to food. You can have chapati in the morning, evening for dinner or lunch. Pair it with anything. It could be some of our curries that we make there or just plain with a cup of tea. And so that is something that is very loved at the restaurant with the sambusas that I make there.
You're listening to All Signs Weekend, Chefs in the City. With us, as always, Steve Stover, WOSU restaurant reviewer, blogger, and cooking teacher, as well as Rich Terapak, Sr., WOSU restaurant reviewer, blogger, and cooking teacher. And joining us this segment is Riziki Yusuf. She is the chef and owner of Riziki Swahili Grill. That's in the Short North District of Columbus. They got started in 2018, and Rich, take it away.
Yeah, one of the things we were talking about is, you know, the difference between Eastern, Western, and Northern African cuisines. It seems like one of the proteins that is sort of preeminent in all those menus is goat.
Oh, yes.
during COVID the lack of distribution, et cetera, could you find goat locally raised?
Oh, yes, I was able to find goat. So there's this store on Carl Road where I get the goat. So it's the store has been around for so many years, and that's where I go and get the goat. And Restaurant Depot, at one time, they were out of goat. They couldn't get goat. So the Cisse store on Carl Road, it really helped. They always had goat.
How about the international market, Saraga? Do they have goat?
Saraga, yes. There is a butcher there that they do have goat. It's nice and fresh, but it's a little bit, for a restaurant, the prices are pretty high.
Yeah. When you buy it retail.
Yes.
So get it wholesale. What other protein dishes do you have if people don't want to have goat?
Well, I have beef. Mm-hmm. I have, there's beef, there's chicken, and goat is one thing that people really love. They come for the goat meat there.
Do you avoid pork products?
Yes, I do.
Okay, that's fine. Vegan dishes.
Yes, we have options for vegans. We have lots and lots of vegetable on the menu that people can choose from. There's cabbage, spinach, kale, beans. So varieties, so many options.
That's great. Vegan is really kind of taken off.
Yes.
I think we have like 10 new vegan restaurants have opened in the last couple months, which is great. It's a bigger part of the population,
yes,
including daughters-in-law of mine. So they'll appreciate that.
We're talking about some of the spices that go into your dishes. Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit more about that, and what local markets stock those seasonings?
I love using cumin and turmeric in my cooking,
Sounds good to me.
Cinnamon as well. So there's Saraga International Market on Morse Road. That's like a place I love to go.
Oh, I had a question too when we were talking about goat and some of the other proteins you use and the dishes you serve. Has there been some of the African recipes for more American palates, or have people been more adventurous and willing to try sort of the more authentic flavors?
The way that I like to do my cooking, because there's a lot of American or other restaurants, like different restaurants from different parts of the world now in Columbus, I try to keep, when I season my food or the spices that I use, I like it to keep it more authentic, just Tanzanian or the Swahili recipes. And it's a mixture of different parts, because when I first started, a lot of people thought that Riziki Swahili Grill was an Indian restaurant.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a lot similar. Even the dishes, the names of the dishes that I make, people think it's Indian food. So I don't know if I answered your question.
No,
you're closer to India than the folks on the West Coast. Have you ever thought about offering any cooking classes? Steve and I do cooking classes at Franklin Park, and we're always looking for different ideas, something to challenge us, but to attract an audience. Do you do demonstrations or anything?
It is something that I did think of that was before COVID. So I think that was back in late 2018 when I just opened that first year. I thought about having like cooking classes there. But just recently, I started a YouTube channel.
Oh, good.
It's called Around the World Cooking with Riziki. And so there I show or I teach people how to make some of the dishes that I have in the restaurant. But the main goal is for me to be able to go to different restaurants and cook with the chef there.
Great, great idea. Great program.
Thank you.
What have you done? Can you give me an example?
On the YouTube channel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So far there's a video of me cooking cabbage and my signature sambusas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sambusas.
We do have some other African restaurants in town. Mm-hmm. Which, besides yourself, is your favorite?
My favorite, I will say, Dabak. Dabak. It's a Senegalese restaurant on Morse Road. That is my favorite. That is one place that my kids like to go. They have grilled lamb there. It is very good.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Can you spell it?
Dabak. It's spelled D as in David, A, B as in boy, A, K, H.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm curious, too, and I just had a question, and it flew away like a little bird. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about sort of weathering the pandemic. And takeout was from the start a big part of your model.
Yes.
And how did that go for you guys?
Oh, well, I'll say that the restaurant, I was blessed. I had customers, people that I hardly knew. They because the pandemic was around, and they were like, Riziki, we've seen lots of restaurant closing. We do not want you to go. So whatever we can do, and as if these people, they talk to each other. There are times that people brought me like supplies, trash bags, paper towels, things like that,
just wonderful?
To keep
Great.
Me there. I
wonderful.
Know. Yeah. That was just... Oh, can't even describe that feeling.
Sure.
And so I had a lot of support from my customers and these people that I just met when I opened the restaurant.
That's
so
great.
That's helped
Obviously,
me a lot.
Had good product from the beginning, and they had to keep you around.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of regulars?
I do. A lot of regulars. There are people that I see almost like every day. And I was open at first like 6 days a week. And then the pandemic there at that time, I only opened like 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And now we're open from Wednesday through Sunday.
Okay.
Yes.
How many sous chefs do you have? Do you have any helpers?
Yes, I do. Currently, I have three, including myself, so four.
Yeah, good.
Yes.
Are you planning on expanding? If 16 seats isn't a lot, but you got to do it carefully, right?
Yes, hopefully. I have to do a lot of planning, but I would love to see Riziki all over the U.S.
Yeah.
Oh, do your kids cook?
My kids? Not really, but they but they do come in and help, and they know this is mom's dream, so they come and help. They don't want to see Riziki close, because at one time I almost gave up. Yes, I almost gave up. I'm like, no, I cannot do this. So I go home, and I don't like my kids to see me cry, but I just could not help it that day. I was in my room and my son walked in and like, Mom, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And he was like, how old was he? I think he was 11 and a half. And he was like, he started crying too. And he's like, Mom, no, you cannot give up. If a question of money, I have my piggy bank.
Everything.
He was taking everything. And that's when I said, you know what?
He's being raised right.
Yeah.
How old are those kids now?
They're 14 and a half now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they're twins.
Yeah.
So, I unfortunately, their father passed away, my late husband. So he passed away the same day I had him. And the restaurant was always like a dream of mine and my late husband. So I'm glad that they're here with me. And maybe I feel like that day, maybe his father sent him like, no, go talk to her. So.
Well, those are long days being a chef in a restaurant.
Yes.
What's your average day like?
Oh, wow.
Starts at 5 in the morning or something?
It starts very early. There are days when I start like at 7 until 9. And there are days 7 until 10. But these days, I have a really good team. So I get breaks.
You get a break.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold? I'm wondering, I heard some lofty goals for across the country. Where are we going to expect to see additional Columbus locations in the near future?
Yeah,
what are you
absolutely.
Thinking? What are you hoping for? Yeah.
Yes. I hope one day I'll be in the short north and maybe Polaris, Easton, all over. I don't know. I'm a dreamer.
the North 4th Street's a good place too.
All right. Well, Riziki Yusuf, thank you so much for joining us here. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me here today. It means so much to me. Thank you.
All right. We'll take a quick break. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City, here on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm WOSU reporter Matthew Rand filling in for Ann Fisher today. And still with us are our regular co-hosts, WOSU restaurant reviewers, bloggers, and cooking teachers, Steve Stover. Rich Terapak stepped out for a minute. We were frankly out of microphones in the studio this morning. It's a good problem to have. He'll be back with us later in the program. And today we're continuing our look at the international food scene in and around Columbus. Bonifacio, a delightful modern Filipino restaurant, has already appeared on several best new restaurant lists and has seen a second restaurant, Bonifacio Filipino Street Food, open up at Bud Dairy Food Hall. The owners aptly describe Filipino cuisine as a combination of Chinese, Spanish, and American with Indian and Arabic influences, real melting pot. The dishes range from rice noodles to chicken adobo to fried chicken and spaghetti together. You heard that right. We're going to talk about it. Krisha Yanga, am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Is the co-owner, thank you for being here, the co-owner of Bonifacio as she joins us now. Krisha, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
Also joining us this morning is MJ Hernandez, executive chef, I should say, at Bonifacio. MJ, welcome.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Whoever wants to go first, Krisha, let's start with you. Talk us a little bit about Filipino cuisine. I kind of described a little bit of it there, but what makes it distinctive?
Yeah, I think like a lot of cuisines, it's really a reflection of the history of the country. And so you have a lot of these Spanish influences, which is pretty unique in a lot of Asian cuisines because we were colonized by Spain for over 300 years. You have your trading partners with China, Indonesia, other Southeast Asian countries, as well as influences from the United States, being a commonwealth of the United States for quite some time. And so you have all these different cultures and different ingredients that are really coming together to create a cuisine that's so unique, especially to Asian cuisine.
Yeah, really at a crossroads of the world.
Absolutely.
And you've been, your location at Bud Dairy Food Hall just opened, well, I guess when, was that open with the rest of the food hall?
Yes.
You've been there from the beginning.
Uh-huh. So 2021 in April.
Very good. And how long has Bonifacio been around?
We're actually celebrating 6 years next Saturday.
They're in Grandview. That's awesome. Talk to us about how the two restaurants differ.
Absolutely. So with Bonifacio, we really wanted to represent Filipino food in the way that reflects our experiences as Filipino Americans. And so you have these authentic flavors with a real focus on presentation and essentially focusing on how do we communicate Filipino food to the mainstream. With Bonnie Filipino Street Food, it's kind of been an evolution because the food hall environment is so different from having a sit-down restaurant where you can take your time with guests and really walk them through the menu. We really had to figure out how do we take Filipino food and communicate it quickly, effectively, and make it something that people are quick to want to try.
And a more limited menu. What are some of the signature ones at Boney?
So a lot of what we do is just rice bowls, rice and noodle bowls, and taking these quintessential Filipino dishes and turning them into kind of a fast casual experience.
Okay.
MJ, let's bring you into this a little bit, and maybe you can talk about some of the signature dishes at the parent restaurant.
The parent restaurant?
That's right.
So we focus a lot on actually Krish's heritage, which is Mindanao. It's a southern island, or it's a cluster of the southern islands of the Philippines. So our flagship dish is it's called the pianggang. It's made with burnt coconut. Ooh. And the chicken's marinated in lemongrass, turmeric, and all fun stuff. But the burnt coconut's really what gives it a distinct flavor.
Smoky?
It's smoky. Okay. You look at it, you think it's probably cancerous, but it's actually been around for centuries. But what it does, it provides a very aromatic, kind of like a sweet, smoky flavor to the dish, just like how, you know, just like coffee does.
Mm-hmm.
And for a second, it was just a passion project, and we decided to just launch it because I personally wanted to dive deep into the southern cuisine of the Philippines, because I was raised in the north area and I had no clue what the southern food tasted like or looked like. And this passion project actually ended up becoming a hit, because our staff really loved it. So they were selling it to every table, like, you should try this dish. And then now it's one of our best dishes. Actually, we use it for our restaurant week
specials
dish too, and it was actually the top seller
So what are the differences between north and south? Just sort of the basic differences,
the broad strokes,
in the cuisines.
So the main one, southern Philippines, the deep south, is very Arabic, and it's a predominantly Islam group of people, and the northern is more like very Hispanic, because that's where the Spaniards settled. So a lot of the difference would be it's more European on the top, and then there's a lot of Arabic in the bottom. So
the fried chicken on the spaghetti sauce would be the northern.
Yes.
And the thing you just described would be the southern. Okay.
Right.
How much does that Spanish influence come into the dishes of the northern Philippines?
Oh, it's in every single one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give us some examples if you would.
So one of our most popular dishes, actually in general, not just our restaurant, it's called a lechon, and the dish alone is already popular among a lot of Latin countries. Lechon is pretty much just a deep fried pork belly. But
wow,
yeah, and yes, wow,
yeah.
But we also have very very Spanish dishes, like it's called menudo. We have afritada, mechado, tocino. So those, even the words are very Spanish. Although we have a slight variation in our version, the Filipino version, because of, what spices or ingredients were available in our island. So
you're listening to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann Fisher today. Still with us is WOSU restaurant reviewer, blogger, and cooking teacher Steve Stover, as well as our guest today, Krisha Yanga. She is co-owner of Bonifacio, a Filipino restaurant in Grandview, and also MJ Hernandez, executive chef at Bonifacio. When we're talking about the flavors of the Philippines and what you can find here in Columbus.
How large is the Filipino community in Columbus, and are they supporters largely?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the latest numbers that we're finding, about 3,000 families here the Columbus area. But yes, they've been great supporters of us, and more and more they're looking for a place to gather for the community, and which we don't necessarily have a lot of because the population is so spread out.
Your mom was really involved at the very beginning and had some other restaurants before this. Can you talk about her?
Yeah, absolutely. So my family actually opened a cafe in Pickerington back in 2012. After I graduated college, my mom and I opened a Red Velvet Cafe. In downtown Columbus, and that's really where we started doing Filipino food and introducing it, and kind of getting a feel for what people wanted, and that's where we learned how to really sell Filipino food and to talk about it, and that's after that is when we opened Bonifacio.
Was there a kind of a learning curve there with introducing the new flavors and combinations to folks here in the Columbus area?
Absolutely. At the time that we opened Bonifacio, there wasn't really this big push for international cuisine. Thankfully, in the past couple years, there has been so many international restaurants that have opened up. And people are more excited to try international cuisines. But at the time, it was, you really couldn't find Filipino food. It wasn't, a talking point in mainstream media. Now you see it a lot in cooking shows, and you'll see ingredients like ube at Trader Joe's. But that really wasn't the case back then. And so we really had to learn, how do we communicate it? How do we present it in a way that's appetizing to folks that they want to try this, and how do we talk about it And how do we express ourselves through that?
Well, how are you celebrating your 6th anniversary?
Good question.
Yeah, so we have some social media giveaways planned for next week, and we're also we also have an event coming up on the 13th called Manila Nights. It's our it's an event series that we've been doing since before the pandemic. Obviously, we took quite a big break there, but it's going to be essentially like a karaoke fundraiser, and we're co-hosting it with OPAL, which is a feminist Asian leadership group.
We've been talking a little bit too about how different restaurants have been weathering the pandemic, and just if you could talk a little bit about your experience with that.
Absolutely. I remember distinctly the day that pretty much the whole world changed for restaurants, especially. We had our Sunday, which was normal. The next day, we had to learn how to be a takeout restaurant. And so we're located in old Wendy's, supposedly one of the first Wendy's that ever existed.
Now, but it's a beautiful space.
It's a beautiful, yeah. But now that you say that, I can totally see it.
Yeah. So we have a drive-thru that we've never used. We actually had it closed off, and we took that down, had to use the drive-thru, set up, you know, third-party delivery, all these things, and learned how to change our entire menu essentially to do takeout almost because we were unsure how long this was going to last, but we had so much prepped. And so we had to figure out how are we going to get rid of all this food and sell it to people for takeout. And so we came up with, you know, a takeout menu and had to use the drive-thru. We learned how to use, we do a boodle night, which is a communal dining experience. And we had to learn how to put that in a box and teach people how to do it at home. But it was a lot of just like really quick ideas. Let's try an idea. If it doesn't work, we'll like go back to the drawing board and just on and on and on.
MJ, how did you have to change the menu with this at that shocking moment?
I mean, it was mostly based on just selling what we had left. But most of the game plan was initiated by Krisha. You know, like for me, you know, as you know, I'd rather be more creative. But she, you know, she had to come up with something that's more that's going to work.
Stuff that travels, for example.
Stuff that travels.
Yeah.
So you know, we had a lunch menu, which is a scaled down version of our dinner menu. It's a protein with a rice and a salad. And then Krisha decided we'll just do meals and, you know, and sell it as is. It's probably a lot easier to sell, especially with, you know, the uncertainties that developed at the time. We don't know how much people were willing to spend. So we actually went very economical. And I think we started with $10.
Ooh.
Just $10 a meal, which was it's pretty much like discount Filipino food. That was the plan.
Fast service.
And actually, it ended up being one of the best decisions because we created a massive takeout following. We were able to communicate food in a different way as well, to where, you know, we were able to introduce Filipino food a lot probably easier. You know, $10, just try us out, and a lot of people did, and that was we're very grateful for everyone who supported us through the pandemic.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of restaurants had difficulty getting what they need to conduct business. How was access to ingredients? How did that hold up for you and your menu?
It wasn't not great.
Not great.
you know, like we just had to be scrappy. You know, good thing for us, we actually acquire a lot of our ingredients and a lot of our stuff to cook actually just from different local international markets anyway. And a lot of them have been readily available for us. But what has been terribly difficult were the specific Filipino items that we use for making our dishes. You know, like a lot of ports were just clogged at the time. So, you know, the easy decision was to just, you know, heartbreakingly, we had to just not serve some dishes that we wanted to serve and some dishes that Filipinos and the rest of Columbus really loved.
Yeah. And then in the midst of all this, you're opening a new restaurant. So Bonnie Filipino Street Food. Krisha, how did that fare getting off the ground in the middle of a pandemic, and how have things been going since?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting to kind of see the waves of business during that time and, you know, mask mandates on, mask mandates off, and to, you know, when new variants come out and things like that, we've definitely had to navigate, you know, understanding where business levels were going to be, in addition to, you know, handling staffing challenges for when folks would get COVID or would, you know, potentially have to test and quarantine, et cetera. Definitely has been a challenge, but has really taught us how to run a business with the health and safety of our staff and our guests in mind. And it's been an exercise in, you know, compassion and just being, you know, responsible business owners in order to kind of move us along and hopefully, you know, make our environment a safer and healthier workplace. But Bud Dairy has been great. We really love working with, you know, Cameron Mitchell Restaurants and all the other chef partners. And they've really built this amazing community space where, you know, people come there for all sorts of different reasons, for events and music and food. And it's a great place to kind of be after having to, you know, social distance for such a yeah. long time.
So, you know, what's next for you guys as you're looking toward the future?
Yeah, so we are definitely looking at expansion opportunities. I think we'll be announcing something here pretty big really soon.
Oh, is there news to be made here?
Yeah, not here quite
okay.
yet.
But keep us posted.
Keep us posted,
absolutely.
Please.
We'll be posting it on our social media. So if you guys have, you know, Facebook, Instagram, we're at Bonifacio 614. But
maybe you better email me.
Yeah.
I'm a fossil.
We'll make sure to do that. But yeah, we'll announce it on our socials.
All right. Soon. Well, stay tuned for that. Krisha Yanga, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. So excited that we got to hang out with you guys.
Krisha Yanga is the co-owner of Bonifacio and Bonnie, both of which are local Filipino restaurants. And MJ Hernandez is the executive chef at Bonifacio. Thanks for you for joining us as well.
Hey, thanks for having us. Thank you.
More All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City to come right here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann Fisher today. Still with us are our regular co-hosts, WOSU restaurant reviewers, bloggers, and cooking teachers, Steve Stover and Rich Tarapak Sr. Now comes the part of our program where we catch up on the latest restaurant news in Columbus. Fellas, take it away.
Well, we've got some exclusives here today, luckily. The famous Top Chef alumni, Avishar Barua, it's announced we'll open another restaurant.
Okay.
He was at Service Bar originally at Middle West Spirits, and then he has left to set up his own Joya's Cafe, which is under construction. And in fact, construction is wrapping up. I was lucky enough to talk to Avishar this week at length, and the Joya's is a new breakfast and lunch spot. And he also is planning to do pop-up dinners there for up to 16 people. And special supper clubs, which will be very cool.
And that is located on
On High Street in beautiful downtown Worthington.
Ah.
But the big news is Agni, A-G-N-I, a new restaurant that will be in the former Ambrose and Eve space. Right. If you recall, that was a restaurant that opened, became a top 10 restaurant, and then unfortunately had to close. But he's changing the space because he wants to respect it. And he's going to have something called a Grill Works wood-fired grill, which our buddy Jim Boudreaux calls the Rolls Royce of grills. So it's going to be really exciting. It'll be a live fire kind of restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and lots of grilled meats and things like that. And I asked Avishar about his rapid growth, and he said, "I believe in Columbus," which I think is great.
Which is good to hear. And Steve and I have witnessed over the last 30 years people who expand too quickly, and it becomes, that combined with COVID can be just deadly.
Right.
So it's interesting that he's doing a wood-fired spot because that's trendy.
And yes, it is. As we'll see in a moment. And remember, Seesaw had a wood-fired, and so I think we're going to see a lot of that. So number two is Chapman's Eat Market,
mm-hmm.
is going to add a new Short North Post. Remember B.J. Lieberman. I talked to him this week, a nationally acclaimed chef. He opened Chapman's Eat Market 3 years ago, and immediately New York Times article putting it among the 50 top new restaurants in the country. In April, he and his wife Bronwyn Haynes opened Ginger Rabbit Jazz Club. We've had two invitations to go there. We haven't been able to go. I really want to go there because it's reservation only, and it's interesting. Minimalist food, but a really cool environment. And so the breaking news is that he's opening a third restaurant. Let's see if I can get it right. Hireath, H-I-R-A-E-T-H.
Which is Welsh.
Welsh for, I tried to get this right. When I talked to him, he said, sort of warm thoughts of home. It's not like yearning for home or being homesick, but thinking
like
happily
yeah.
about coming home.
Kind of hearth and home.
It's at
yeah.
Lincoln Street, which is, it's a street that's parallel to High Street, where the new parking garages are.
Yeah, actually, it's perpendicular to High Street.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's about in the 700 block of North High.
About where we went for the happy hours, that area.
Segundo.
El Segundo and Del Mar and Forno. Mm-hmm. But it's on the east side of the street, and it's a new building, so he'll have a lot of cool stuff.
And one of the things that is really making all that stuff more accessible is there are two new parking garages on the east side of High Street.
Hooray.
About a block off. So,
getting easier to get around.
Yeah,
down there.
You don't have to plug in your whatever on your phone. It's better.
Not surprisingly, this also features wood fired cooking. He's got to have a lower level with an open wood fire. And it's a fairly large space.
This is the big trend, the wood-fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this month at least. And two of Columbus' most famous chefs are doing it.
And the new Hilton, which will open soon, perhaps at the end of the month.
It's supposed to open this week.
Yeah. Also has a wood fire.
Yeah.
So
and another rooftop bar, which we'll hopefully talk about. The other one, Suburban Southern Kitchen. The chefs from formerly with Barcelona who own Alcoria on King Avenue, just east of Neal, are opening a suburban with a spelled suburban, as in the drink bourbon.
I see what they did there.
And Patrick Marker, actually one of the co-owners, trained in Charleston and worked there for 13 years. And so it's got gumbo, corn chowder, hot chicken, house barbecue chips, shrimp and grits, Creole gravy, off to a great start. We were up there with some friends, and we think it's up for it's a great opportunity.
So we've got some other things going on as well. I think one of the more interesting things, and this was featured in the Dispatch this week, is a culinary program that Rabbi Kaltman and his wife and son have put together. It's modeled after an Australian program that the rabbi was familiar with, he may even be Australian. The idea is to get mostly high school students
mm-hmm.
into a culinary setting to build sort of confidence and resilience. And it went over really well in Sydney. It's getting backing from the state of Ohio, from the Columbus Foundation, and a number of others. there's something like they expect to have 5,200 students.
Oh, no kidding.
That's a... through this program. They can do that because the program is essentially four sessions of 2 hours each. But it's enough to get kids comfortable with eating the right things.
It's culinary and nutrition.
And nutritious. And might even help, the scourge of diabetes among young people is...
Where is it?
It's at 2525 East Main. It was a restaurant called the Bexley Premier.
Mm-hmm. You remember?
It's a great location. It's a very nice interior. I'm glad it's being put to good use. Whitehall has already signed up, and I think all the educators out there, particularly in the high schools, ought to be looking to take advantage of the program. Just keeping up with Underground, Monthly, Navigator, all of those lists.
And all these new restaurants opening.
There are 20 new restaurants just this summer. One of the a returning person has opened Agave and Rye, both in the Short North and in the old Spaggio's place on Grandview Avenue.
Wild decor.
but kind of fun. I always drop her name. What is
Yvonne, Yavonne Sarber and her
Sarber.
Husband.
Sarber, yeah. And she had a couple of other spots in Columbus.
Manifesto. What's the one there, her signature place?
De Novo.
Yeah, De Novo.
And they sort of left town and opened about six of these agave restaurants in other locations.
Yeah, it seemed to be just sort of taken over here.
Tequila and tacos and very creative. For example, mac and cheese beignets was one of the things that caught my eye on the menu for my diet.
I'm going to send Steve to that program. a spot that all the Allentonians will remember is Diorini's Villa, which is on Henderson, or was on Henderson. It's been taken over by Kelly's Pub and Patio. Clean Eats on North Hamilton in Clintonville. It's their third location. One of our favorite ways of touching base with these restaurants is to indulge ourselves in happy hour with friends. How many have we done, Steve? Over 40?
51.
51 different happy hours.
It's a grueling and dirty job.
And I have yet to be invited to a single one.
Well, you ought to come along.
we did one at Understory just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we ought to bring the staff along. The good thing is you get to sample a lot of stuff at good prices. You can also have a few drinks at good prices or a glass of wine. And as we advertise in our cooking classes, you can still get home in time for Jeopardy.
Well, that's important.
That's for our demographic.
We have a quick call here. Question for Steve from Dwight in Columbus. Dwight, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And Steve, I wanted to know if you have heard of a new restaurant called Can't Believe It's Vegan.
Yes.
They used to, it's up on Schrock Road, mm-hmm. uh-huh. just east of Cleveland. And Clayton Freeman is the owner, and good food. My favorite's the Buddha Bowl. My wife likes the BLT sandwich, but I just wanted to know if he's heard of it or been there yet.
Well, it's on our list, as a matter of fact.
As Dwight, you are really hitting the nail on the head, one of the things we're going to talk about, and we may even do a show on it, is the growth of vegetarian and vegan and plant-based foods. And this would be another good example. And we have not been there, but we have been to Commune, which is a very gourmet vegan place on Parsons Avenue.
Which we're so happy survived COVID.
Barely, but... I remember we took our Romeo group, retired old men eating out, and 16 carnivores went to this place, and they loved it. So, Dwight, thank you for that heads up.
They were converted.
Yeah, they were. They took their wives.
Wow.
They went back.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, the one rooftop place we were going to talk about for happy hour is the Mandrake. but we've been to most recently, I guess Forno was probably one of our
most recent happy hours. We did a whole show on happy hour happy recently, hour.
So,
too.
And they keep popping up. And the new restaurant in the Westin downtown, Chichiti, is
which just, I call it Chichetti, but we don't know what it is.
Oh, no.
Somebody with an Italian background can fill us in. At any rate, they've just opened about 3 weeks ago, so they don't have a happy hour yet. But when they do, we'll be sure to go back there.
But they do have a lot of small plates.
They have mostly, they're featuring, that's what the word Chichetti or Chichiti is all about. They have shareables, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the feature of the menu.
It's some a famous chef, right?
Yeah, there's a Viviano?
Fabio Viviani.
Viviano, who is in charge of this national program. This is not just in the Westin in Columbus. It started as a restaurant in Boston. He moved, he opened one in New York, and we are the third.
Okay.
It's kind of nice to be in that gang. They have, and this is kind of frequent. You'll have a focaccio to share. You've got we were there a couple nights ago and had a great Caesar salad with truffles. So it's all good stuff.
It's bigger menu than I thought because the Chichetti means small bites, but they do have entrees too.
They do have entrees. Again, it's at the old Thurber Cafe space, very much blown up and redecorated, and it's quite attractive. So,
I've got one. From Worthington Inn, our friend Brian Swanson, who owns Bodega and Bristol Republic in the Short North, has opened the Worthington Tavern, and I've gotten good reports. It's in the former Half Pint location, and it's a full-service. They have elevated American food. We keep hearing the term elevated. But burgers, steaks, salad, they have a steak frite, and it features a patio with a retractable roof and a fire pit, and it's part of a Dora.
Okay,
which is a big thing in Worthington. So we had Rich has got some more, but I'm pleased to get, we had the great news from Avishar and from BJ Lieberman. And
tacos continue to dominate in our foreign market.
Columbus can't get enough tacos.
Yes. Austin-based company called Torchy's Tacos has opened up recently. It's almost impossible to keep up with it, but boy, do we try, Steve.
Yes. It's, as we said, it's a dirty job and somebody has to. Well, you sound like you're into food and eating out.
Yeah, I try on a meager reporter salary. No,
happy hour.
Yes, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And we have a couple sad closings. Marshall's, the restaurant and bar in Grandview on First Avenue, was closed, and I think the family. And Melt Bar and Grilled, one of the two in the Short North. And
the Easton
is still open.
Is still open.
Because a couple times I've talked about closings where there's more than one restaurant, and you got to be sure to mention that. And then the Columbus Food Truck Festival is going to be in Hilliard this year, August 19 to 21. At the Franklin County Fairgrounds.
Don't want to miss that.
Yeah.
All right.
So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Well, we're about out of time, so we'll start wrapping it up here. Steve Stover and Rich Terapak Sr., our WOSU restaurant reviewers, bloggers, and cooking teachers. Thank you both for joining me on the program today.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun, Matt.
This has been fun. You've been listening to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Matthew Rand filling in for Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News.